Was the storm going to build back up again? I'm talking about right and wrong. Charlie laughed. You're going to stand here with a gun in my face, ready to kill me, and you're going to lecture me on right and wrong? Who appointed you judge, jury, and executioner? You pass a burning bush on the way here and get some new commandments? I think the old ones kind of dried up and blew away when the first of the dead rose up and started eating people. Call me crazy, but I think that was a game changer. When dead ain't even dead no more, then as far as I'm concerned, no other previous rules apply. So that means right is whatever I decide it is. No, Benny began, but Charlie made his move. He stuck his left hand out to the side, and Benny's reflexes reacted before he could control them, and his eyes flicked toward the movement. With lightning speed, Charlie used his right to slap the pistol out of Benny's hand. With one step, he was chest to chest with Benny, and his face was a mask of naked fury. He grabbed Benny's shirt with one hand and hauled him to his toe tips, and knocked his head to one side with a powerful slap of his hard-open palm, and then backhanded him, so that his head whipped all the way to the other side. The shock to Benny's cheek was nothing compared to the double jolt to his neck, and Benny's knees buckled. "Benny!" Nix cried, but all that escaped the stricture around her throat was a desperate croak. Charlie Pink Eye shoved Benny away in disgust. "You're a worthless little piece of crap, kid. You talk big when you're holding a gun, but you don't even have the stones or the smarts to pull the trigger when you have the chance. That's why people like you don't run the world. It's people like me. People who aren't afraid to make the hard choices and take the tough actions, who get things done, and who deserve to say what's what. Power is the only thing that matters, pup, and the sad news is that you just don't have enough of it." "Kiss my ass," Benny snarled, and he launched himself at Charlie. His training with Tom hadn't lasted long enough for him to learn the subtleties of combat. He didn't know many tricks, wouldn't have qualified for any belt. All he had was his rage. He barreled into Charlie so hard that the big man was actually forced backward two steps. Benny came in low and fast, driving his shoulder into Charlie's thighs, hoping to knock him down. If he could get him down, maybe he could stomp on him, break an ankle or a knee, or Charlie's face. But Charlie didn't go down. He dug his heels into the mud to stop Benny's rush, and then he clubbed Benny aside with a forearm shot to the side of the head. Benny saw it coming and ducked enough to miss most of the force, but there was still enough power there to drive him to one knee. With a growl of anger, Benny tried to hook a punch into Charlie's crotch, but Charlie turned into it, and Benny's fist collided with the big man's hip bone. Pain exploded in Benny's hand. "Nice try, pup," Charlie said. "Points for having some stones, more than I thought. Not enough, though." He grabbed Benny by the hair, jerked him to his feet, and then buried an uppercut so hard into Benny's stomach that his whole body was lifted off the ground. His entire abdomen seemed to be folded around Charlie's massive fist, and the impact drove all of the air out of the world. Benny fell, eyes bulging, face purpling, gasping, capable only of making high-pitched squeaks as he fought to take in even a mouthful of air. He heard Nix calling his name, screaming as she fought against the hammer. He heard the laughter of Charlie and the other bounty hunters. He heard his own inhuman squeaks. He heard Charlie say, "Digger, Sting, you boys do me a favor and drag his sorry butt into the pen and tie him up. Don't be nice about it. Hammer, show the girl some manners and then tie her up with the others. The rest of you, go find those other kids and let's get this camp together. This whole thing's been a total cluster f-" And something came hurtling out of the dark and slammed into the back of the man called Digger as he bent to grab Benny. He gurgled out a single low cry and fell face forward onto the ground. Benny stared at the man, at the knife that was buried nearly to the hilt between his shoulder blades. The handle was black and ribbed, and the inch of blade that showed was equally black and double-edged. Benny felt his brain twist around backward. He knew that knife. Then a scream cut through the air as something massive leaped over the dying man's body and crashed full force into the knot of bounty hunters. The horse wasn't one of the bulky draft horses that had broken free from the camp. It was Apache. And riding the big buckskin was a bloody man, whose clothing hung in rags, whose eyes were dark and wild, and who slashed at the bounty hunters with a glittering sword. Tom. Chapter 54. Tom! Benny yelled, not knowing if what he was seeing was real or if he had just gone completely crazy. How was it even possible? Apache reared up and kicked one bounty hunter in the chest, and the man flew backward, as if he'd taken a double load of buckshot. Another man rushed the horse from the side and tried to pull Tom from the saddle. Tom's sword flashed downward, and the man fell shrieking beneath the horse's hooves.
"Christ!" bellowed Charlie. "That's Tom Amura. Kill him!"
He brought his gun up, but Benny came up out of the mud and once more drove his shoulder into the big man. Charlie wasn't ready for it this time, and the impact knocked them both to the ground. Charlie's shot punched a hole through the shoulder of Texas John McGoran. As the bullet slammed Texas John backward, his fingers jerked the trigger of his pump shotgun, and the spray caught Wild Bill Fairchild full in the face. Benny had no chance against Charlie in any kind of fight, but he could at least keep him from shooting Tom, so Benny lunged at Charlie's arm and bit his wrist. Charlie howled in pain, dropped the gun, but then used that hand to punch Benny in the face. Benny felt his nose crack. He kneed Charlie in the thigh twice, and then flung himself away from a second and more powerful punch that would have easily broken his neck. He scrambled to his feet and spun around looking for Nix. She was 20 feet away, and the hammer was holding her like a shield as Tom advanced on him. The rain faded to a drizzle and then stopped, although thunder rumbled through the heavens and lightning flashed in the west.
"Drop that sword, Tom, or I'll snap this little girl's neck," the hammer promised.
He meant it, too. He had his whole arm looped around her throat and held her so that her feet were inches above the ground. The other bounty hunters were recovering from the initial shock of seeing Tom Amura returning from the dead as a living, breathing, fighting man. They pulled their guns and pointed them at him. Tom reined Apache to a stop. The buckskin still wore the remnants of his carpet coat, although it looked like it had been gnawed on by every Zom from here to the state line. "You don't want to do that, Marion," said Tom in a voice that was surprisingly calm. "Put the girl down."
"Kiss my hairy butt, Tom. You drop that sword, or so help me, I'll pull her head clean off."
Tom flicked his wrist so that the blood that streaked the sword was whipped off. It splashed Joey Duke across the face.
"Benny,"
Tom said, "are you okay?" Benny got to his feet, his head spinning from the punch to the nose.
"Yeah,"
he said breathlessly.
"That's going to cost you,"
Charlie growled as he also got to his feet. His gun was muddy and useless, but he didn't need one. Tom was surrounded by nearly 20 bounty hunters. Tom slowly raised his sword until the tip of the blade was pointed directly at the Motor City Hammer. "I'm going to give you one last chance, Marion. Let Nix go." The hammer laughed, and so did the other men.
"Or what?" he sneered. "You're outnumbered and outgunned, Tom. What the hell do you think you're gonna do?"
"Me?"
Tom looked faintly amused. Hell, I'm not going to do anything. But you will let her go.
Says who?
Says me.
A voice snarled out of the darkness, and there was a heavy whoosh as a long metal pole cut through the air, and a flash of silver as a wickedly sharp bayonet blade cut through the back of the Motor City Hammer's left leg. His Achilles tendon parted with an explosion of blood, and he screamed, as high and shrill as a little girl, and fell. He literally threw Nyx from him, and she staggered toward Benny, who rushed to catch her. Everyone turned, as a pale figure jumped forward into the firelight, her snow-white hair swirling as she landed and pivoted and slashed again with her spear. The air was suddenly filled with a new rainfall, but these drops were a red so dark that it was almost black. The hammer clamped both of his hands around his throat. His eyes went wide, and were instantly filled with the dreadful certainty that no matter who won this night's conflict, Charlie Pink Eye or Tom Amura, he, Marion Hammer, would own no piece of either victory or defeat, and that he would play no part in whatever future was being written here. He tried to speak, to say something, to articulate the terror and need in his heart, but that bull throat of his was no longer constructed for speech. He toppled slowly forward, like a great building finally yielding to years of corruption and decay, and then he fell into the mud. The lost girl stood over him, her hazel eyes as cold as all the hatred and loss in the world, and then she spat on the unmoving back of the man who had chased her sister into the rain and then left her body in the mud, as if it was garbage.
God, Nyx breathed, massaging her bruised throat.
Charlie Mathias stared at his fallen friend, his mouth open, disbelief painted on his features. Benny could only imagine what was going on in the big man's mind. Benny had heard all of the stories of Charlie and the hammer. He'd sat in Lafferty's general store on far too many afternoons and listened as they recounted their adventures. Always their adventures. Always together. A pair of devils, drawing power from each other, enabling and supporting each other. The right and left fist of violence out here, in the great rot and ruin. And now the hammer was dead. In a few minutes he would reanimate as a Zom, as one of them, as one of the things that Charlie and the hammer hated and humiliated and debased for fun and profit. As Benny watched, Charlie's face changed. His eyes went from wide shock to narrow slits filled with lethal intent, and his mouth tightened into a grimace of bloodlust.
"I'm going to rip you apart, girl," he said. "I should have done it 5 years ago. And now I'm going to make sure it's done and done right. By God, you are going to scream all the way to hell."
Lila raised her spear, and the bounty hunters raised their guns. Benny and Nyx stepped up to flank her, the three of them ready to make a stand against Charlie Pink Eye. Tom stepped between Charlie and them. "A long time ago, I gave you a chance," said Tom. "Your goons here don't know it, but I had you down and bleeding when you tried to invade Sunset Hollow. Your life was in my hands, Charlie, and you begged me, to give you another chance. You swore to me that you'd change, that things would be different. I didn't know then that you were the one who was behind everything bad that goes on out here, that you started Gameland, and that you were the one who kept it going. Back then, I thought you were just a hired gun, working for someone else. Now I know different, Charlie. Now I know the truth. And every day for the rest of my life, I'm going to feel sick, knowing that I let you live when I should have just switched you off. I thought I was doing the right thing. I thought I was being merciful. Never kill a helpless enemy." Benny saw Tom's face darken with self-loathing. "I've got 5 years of blood on my hands, Charlie. How many lives is that? How many men, women, and children whose futures were ruined? How many people tortured or murdered? Charlie wasn't impressed.
Yeah, you suckered me once and got the upper hand, big friggin' deal. You think that makes you tougher than me? You think that makes you anything? You ain't nothing but a sad footnote in an old history book, Tom. You're not a cop, and you're not a samurai. You're not even a good bounty hunter. You don't have the guts for it. You're nothing but a fool and a coward.
Benny stepped forward and punched Charlie in the face. He put every ounce of outrage and almost 14 years' worth of inner conflict into that punch, and it caught Charlie on the point of the jaw and spun him halfway around. "My brother is not a coward," he bellowed. Time seemed to grind to a halt. Charlie turned slowly back to face them. There was a purple knot forming on his jaw, but if the punch had done him any real harm, then it didn't show on his face. His eyes danced with humor, and he wore an ugly butcher's smile.
"You throw a good punch for a little pup," he said. "How's the hand?"
Benny said nothing. In fact, he had to clamp his mouth shut, because he was pretty sure that he had just broken his hand. Every one of the thousands of nerve endings in his fist was sending white-hot flashes of pain to his brain, and his knuckles were swelling like balloons. He tried to block out the pain, tried not to let his eyes fill with tears. He concentrated on hating Charlie and tried to figure out a way to save Nix. The rain started falling again, and the wind was moaning louder than ever in the trees. Charlie pointed to him.
"I'm going to save you for last. After I kick your brother's ass, I'm going to take the lost girl and see how she does in a zombie pit without any weapons. That goes for your red-headed friend, too. Think that'll be fun? Afterward, I'm going to feed you to the zombies, one finger at a time."
Nix made a lunge at Charlie, but Tom grabbed her shoulder and held her back.
"No, sweetie," he murmured. "This animal is mine."
Charlie gave him a come-and-get-it gesture with both hands, then called to his men.
"What kind of drugs are you taking, Tom? You're friggin' well surrounded and outnumbered. We're not going to duke it out. This isn't a fair fight. You're just going to die. I don't know how you escaped them zombies back on the highway, but you should never have come back here. Not alone."
"No," Tom agreed. "It isn't a fair fight. And just so you know, I'm not alone."
Charlie looked momentarily perplexed. A few of the bounty hunters exchanged looks, and then everyone turned slowly around. The rain was falling steadily now, but the moaning in the forest had nothing to do with the wind. The entire camp was surrounded by hundreds of the living dead. Tom Amura looked at Lila, and they both smiled. Chapter 55. The Zom shambled into the camp, and the moan they let loose was an unrelenting cry of hunger that now had the promise of being satisfied. The bounty hunters screamed and backed away, colliding with one another. Everyone who had a gun began firing.
"Benny!" cried Nix,
and shoved him out of the way as a Zom lurched toward him. She ducked under the zombie's arms and kicked it savagely in the knee, but as it toppled, she shoved it into the arms of one of the bounty hunters. The man shrieked as the crippled Zom bore him to the ground and clamped its rotting teeth onto his shoulder. Lila used the butt end of her spear to jab several of the Zoms in the chest, knocking them away as she retreated.
"With me!" she called, and Benny and Nix clustered next to her.
Neither of them had a weapon.
"Gun!"
Lila barked, but Benny looked around, expecting to see someone trying to shoot him. Nix, however, caught Lila's meaning and reached for the pistol in the lost girl's holster. It was an automatic, and Nix racked the slide and took the gun in a firm two-handed shooter's grip as the three of them kept backing toward the wagons. Benny saw one of the Zoms. It was the huge man in the tattered overalls of a mechanic. Grab a bounty hunter by the throat and drive him back against a tree. The ropes that had once held the mechanic to the tree in the hungry forest still dangled from his wrists. Other shapes moved through the shadows behind him. Ropes dangled from withered necks and emaciated waists, and firelight sparkled in their dead black eyes. Benny felt a mix of savage pride and relief. It had been an insane plan, and it had taken longer than Benny had expected. But it was working. He should have trusted that Lila would get it done. But Tom! Nothing in his plan explained how his brother had returned from apparent death and had come here to save them. And it was clear from what Tom had said, and from the knowing look he'd shared with Lila, that he had known that the Zoms were closing in on the camp. How had he known? Had he met the lost girl and, after all of his attempts, finally spoken with her? Here, on this night of storms and blood? Benny turned to find his brother, and there Tom was, right in the thick of it. Several Zoms separated him from Charlie. Several bounty hunters tried to rush Tom at the same time that half a dozen Zoms closed in on him. And it was in that moment that Benny finally saw and understood the kind of man Tom Amura was. His whole body was a blur of coordinated movement. Big Jim Starr, one of Charlie's fiercest men, grabbed Tom by the shoulder and spun him around. But Tom turned into the pool, and his left hand shot out with whip-like speed. Big Jim clutched a ruin of a throat and fell away. But before he even had time to fall, Tom slashed up and wide, then left and across, and two Zoms seemed to fly apart. Joker Brills pulled a pistol and snapped off a shot, but Tom had seen him go for his gun and was moving before the barrel was properly aimed. Gun and gun arm flew into the air, and Tom pivoted and cut the legs from another Zom, then rose and slashed Axeman Santiago across the chest, in a double cut that left a deep red X across his torso. Tom whirled and cut, and his attackers, both the living and the dead, fell before him. Benny could see Charlie watching all of this from the far side of the clearing, and there was a slack expression, somewhere between shock and awe, on his heavy features. Then a powerful hand clamped onto Benny's leg, and he was falling. As he went down, he twisted around and saw the Motor City Hammer, staring at him with black and lifeless eyes as he pulled Benny toward his bloody mouth. Benny screamed and kicked him in the face, over and over again, but the hammer was beyond feeling pain. Then Nick stamped down on the hammer's wrist and put the barrel of the pistol hard against the Zom's forehead and pulled the trigger. The hammer's head jerked back, and he collapsed down, dead forever this time. "Thanks," Benny gasped as Nix hauled him to his feet. "Here," Lila said. She knelt by the hammer's side and pulled from his belt the heavy metal club he always carried. She tossed it to Benny, who caught it with his swollen hand. He yelped and cursed, but he managed to close his fist around it. "Maybe it's only sprained," he told himself. Then he had no more time to think about it as Vin Trong rushed at him with a butcher knife in his fist. Joey Duke made a grab for Nix, and four Zoms staggered toward Lila. "You and your brother are a pain in my—" Vin began, but Benny didn't want to hear it. He used the pipe to batter aside the knife, and then rang the club off of Vin's forehead. Vin's eyes lost focus, and Benny closed the deal with an overhand swing that put Vin down. Benny didn't know or care if he'd killed the man or not. He needed to help Nix and Lila, but as he turned, he saw Nix moving backward and firing with each step. Her bullets punched into Joey Duke with such force that it made him look like a puppet, dancing on the strings of a demented puppeteer. The last shot caught him high, and he pitched backward into the arms of three Zoms, a nun and two men in business suits. The man collapsed under the Zoms, screaming as they began to feast. Nick stared at the fallen man, then down at the gun she held. "God," she murmured, her voice sounding lost, and for a moment Benny thought that killing Joey had somehow broken her. But then a Zom reached for her, and Nix calmly, coldly, turned and shot it between the eyes. Another body fell past Benny, and he turned to see Lila dispatch the last of the four Zoms who had rushed her. Her face ran with rainwater, and she was grinning.
Grinning? That is one spooky girl, Benny thought.
From all that Lila had been through, she was lost in more ways than one. He wondered if there was any roadmap that would lead her toward some kind of normal life. Or was she too far out in the wilderness of her own experience for that?
Benny!
Tom's voice shook him back to the moment, and he saw his brother running toward him. The last of the bounty hunters were trying to make a stand by the bonfire, and a wall of Zoms was closing in on them. "The east path!" Tom yelled, pointing with his bloody sword, and Benny turned toward the path the children had taken. It was the only path clear of the dead. Lila had said it was the best one for their escape because it was elevated, part of an ancient rock wall that had long ago collapsed, and unlike all of the other paths, it didn't directly connect with the forest. It had been their planned escape route, but in all of the turmoil, Benny had become confused.
"Run!" Tom yelled.
And even as he said it, Apache came tearing out of the shadows and galloped at full speed along the path, sensing the direction of safety. Benny began backing up, but he was still looking at the camp. There were more than 1,000 Zoms closing in now, and only 8 bounty hunters. After all they'd done, after all the harm they'd caused, Benny felt a flicker of compassion for them. And he knew that this was the same thing Tom must have felt when he'd spared Charlie's life years ago, back in Sunset Hollow, whatever that was. But there was no saving these men. Lila and Nix knew it, because they ran along the path without a flicker of hesitation. Tom knew it, though when he caught up with Benny, he too turned and looked back for a moment.
"We can't save them," Tom said.
"No,"
whispered Benny. But his reply was lost in the rain.
"Go catch up with the girls," Tom said.
"I'll hold this trail until you're well clear. Leave Apache for me, because when I leave, I'll be in a hurry." Benny ran down the road and whistled for the horse, and Apache stopped, turned reluctantly, and trotted back to him. Benny tied the reins in a loose pull knot to a stunted tree.
"Tom, how did you... I mean, how are you alive?"
Tom flashed him a grin. "Remember when you threw that bottle of cadaverine to me with the cap loose, and I spilled it all over myself? I think you saved my life. After I fell, I landed right in the middle of them. But they didn't go for me. Not right away. The cadaverine gave me a couple of seconds, and I rolled under a car. I was stuck there for hours. I didn't know where you were, or if you were alive."
"Jeez, how bad are you hurt? I saw a lot of blood."
"I took some buckshot pellets. It'll be fun getting them out, but it could have been a lot worse." The gunshots and screams were intensifying. "Family reunion later, kiddo. Haul ass." Benny did just that. He turned and followed Nix and the lost girl out of the camp, leaving the dying to the dead. But as he rounded the bend in the path, Benny skidded to a stop. Nix and Lila stood on either side of the road, and 50 yards beyond them was the 12-year-old girl and the other children. standing like a monster from some old fairy tale, covered with mud and blood, fierce and terrible, was Charlie Pinkeye. He held the pistol at arm's length, but his gun hand was no longer steady. He was breathing hard, and his red eye leaked tears of blood. There were deep gashes on his cheeks, and his shirt was torn open to reveal a body that was crammed with muscles and crisscrossed by scar tissue.
"Damn you all to hell," he said in a low hiss. "You took everything I had away from me. You led those monsters here. You turned against your own kind."
Benny's lips curled back, but Nix got her words out first. "You're not our kind, you freak. You killed my mother. You're not even human." She pointed her pistol at Charlie and fired, but he read her intent and ducked to one side, and the shot went wide by 5 inches. The slide locked back with a hollow click, the magazine empty. Growling with frustration, Nix threw the pistol at Charlie and caught him on the shoulder, but he only winced. Lila tried to gut him with her spear, but the big man moved so fast that only the tip of the blade grazed him. Even so, it drew a red-hot line across his abdomen, and he howled in pain. He used one fist to club the spear down, so that the point dug into the mud, and with his other fist he punched Lila in the stomach. She collapsed to her knees and threw up into the weeds. Nix made a grab for Lila's spear, but Charlie backhanded her to the edge of the path, so that she stood wobbling on the edge of a sheer drop, her arms pinwheeling for balance. And then Benny moved. He ran to Nix and grabbed her wrist and pulled her away from the ledge, and then he rushed at Charlie. He still had the hammer's club, and Benny swung it hard at Charlie's head. The bounty hunter was actually starting to smile at the obviousness of the attack, but Benny was tired of being obvious, tired of being beaten up, clubbed down, tossed aside like something that, in the grand scheme of things, just plain didn't matter. He turned the swing into a fake, checked the hit, and used his left hand to punch Charlie in the nose. It wasn't a very powerful blow, but it doesn't require power to break a nose. Charlie's head rocked back as his nose flattened and blood flew from his nostrils. And that's when Benny hit him with the pipe. He grabbed the weapon with both hands and swung it in a sideways arc that 14 years ago would have sent a baseball into the bleachers in any major league park in the country. The swing had everything Benny had to give. Rage and hate, hurt and fear, passion and confusion. And it also had love and grief. For Nix and her mother. For Lila and her sister Annie. For the 12-year-old girl and the kids who huddled around her. For George Goldman, the quiet hero. For Tom and the heartbreak he felt over Jesse Riley. For people named and unknown who had fallen victim to this man, this abomination. He hit Charlie Mathias only once, and once was enough. The big man took a single wandering sideways step, all sense and control knocked out of his head by the blow. He staggered past Nix, who was crouched down holding Lila against her. He swung around in a sloppy turn, fighting for balance that was no longer his to own, and then his next step came down 3 inches past the edge of the path. Below his big foot was a drop that plunged 100 yards into darkness. Charlie Mathias shot Benny one last, momentary glance of desperation and fear. Benny would like to have seen guilt there, or some last-minute awareness and acceptance of the wrongness of all that he had done. That would have been nice. That would have been closure. All he saw in Charlie's eyes was hatred. Then Charlie fell. with the rain, with the last few pops of gunfire from the camp, and with the moans of the hungry dead, they never heard him land. Benny stood on the edge of the trail, and for all he could see or hear, he might as well have been on the edge of the world. He held the hammer's club out at arm's length, opened his hand, and let the weapon fall. There would be a need for weapons, he knew that, but there would be other weapons. This one, like the man it had killed, was unclean. He turned to the others and sank to his knees by Nix and Lila. They both stared past him to the edge of the road, their eyes wide. Benny rested his head on Nix's shoulder, and she gathered him to her. Lila wrapped her arms around them both. Then there were other arms, the 12-year-old girl and the children. Tom Amura sat on Apache's back and stared at the huddled mass. He'd heard the single gunshot behind him and had come as fast as he could. He read the scene and understood what he was seeing. He heard Benny and Lila and Nix and the others as they wept. Tom bowed his head and he too wept. Epilogue. Sunset Hollow. They walked in silence, side by side, heading southeast. Miles fell away behind them. They passed another gas station where Tom greeted another monk. They didn't linger, though. The day was burning away. Benny's hand was still wrapped in tape. One of his knuckles was cracked and his wrist was sprained, but in the 2 weeks since the fight at the camp, he'd healed quickly. Tom looked like an Egyptian mummy. Doc Gurujala had pulled 41 shotgun pellets out of him, and there were at least 10 that he couldn't reach without doing more harm than good. Tom told him to leave them. Lila was healing too, although more slowly. When Charlie had punched her in the stomach, he'd clipped her ribcage and broken 3 bones. She was staying with Lu Chong's family. They had the room, and Chong's aunt was a nurse. If Lila was impressed by the town and all it had to offer, she didn't show it. And getting her to part with her spear nearly caused a minor war at the Chong residence. Benny was surprised to see that Nix and Lila were bonding, and the two girls spent hours sitting apart from Benny and Chong, heads bowed together, talking. Nix never told him what they talked about. One night, while walking back from Chong's, Benny said, "I'm trying to see things from her perspective. She must not know where she belongs."
"She belongs with us," said Nix.
"Even if we leave? Wouldn't she be better off staying here with the Chong's or the Kirsches?"
Nix shook her head.
"Would they understand what she's been through, Benny?"
"Do we?"
"Nix, we don't even really know her."
She shrugged and brushed a curly strand of red hair from her face.
"Maybe not, but we know her better than anyone else."
They went home. Nix slept in Benny's room. Benny camped out on the couch. The couch was uncomfortable, but he really didn't care. Morgie came to see them, but he was weak and fragile. Even with a head injury, he was able to see how things were between Benny and Nix. Benny braced himself for Morgie to be angry, but he too had been changed by what had happened. He nodded thoughtfully and went home. It all seemed like 1,000 years ago. Gameland was still out there, and now they knew where. However, if Benny thought that hearing Lila's story would change the people in town or spark them into action, he was disappointed. They were shocked, they were sympathetic, but they said that it was too far away, that it wasn't their concern, that it was too dangerous to mount a raid on it. After a couple of days, they even stopped talking about it.
"It's just like everything beyond the fence," Benny complained. "They act like it's all happening on a different planet."
"To them it is," said Nix. My mom told them about the first game land, and they didn't do anything then, either. Nothing would be done, and that was the ugliest truth. But when he said this to Tom, his brother's eyes became distant, and he changed the subject. Each day, however, he spent at least an hour in his workroom making bullets, and he had maps pinned to the walls. Benny, Nix, and Tom spent every evening talking about things. Not about the fight or the dreadful things each of them had been forced to do. No. They talked about the jumbo jet. Tom had seen it, too. He'd watched it fly out of the east, and then turn slowly over the mountains and fly back. "What do you think is out there?" Benny asked Nix, one night after Tom went to bed. "Out where the jet went." "I don't know." "It won't be my islands," she said. "It'll be something different. Something that isn't here." "Here isn't that bad. Not now that Charlie's gone." Her green eyes were full of shadows. "Here, Benny, they accept that game land exists and won't do anything about it." She shook her head. "Here isn't enough, Benny. Not for me. Not anymore." Later, when Benny told Tom that Nix wanted to go find where the jet came from, Benny had expected Tom to scoff at the idea. Tom hadn't. Next morning, there was a stack of maps on the kitchen table. There was one for every state. On the 15th day since the camp, Tom told Benny that he had one more closure job he had to do. "I want you to go with me." Benny sighed. "I don't know if I can," he said. Tom sat down with him at the table. "Please," he said. "Just this last one, and then I'm done. I can't do it alone." Benny studied his brother for a long time and then nodded. "Okay," he said. "But after this, I'm done too." Nix went with them, but only for the first part of the trip. She was harder than before, less apt to smile, which Benny understood. Much of her softness was gone, and Benny hoped that with time it would return. The toughness, he knew, would remain. Nix spent hours writing in her book of zombie lore. She practiced with Benny every day with the wooden swords. When she trained, her beautiful face was set and grim, and Benny was sure that each time she swung the sword, she wasn't seeing him. She was seeing the faces of the men who would have put her into a pit with Zoms. "Give her time," Tom said one day after practice. "I plan on it," said Benny, and Tom smiled. "All the time she needs." They left Mountainside on a gray morning in late September. Tom led the way, often walking alone as a way of dealing with his own sadness and loss. Benny and Nix followed behind, vigilant of the world around them and the threats it offered, but feeling safe and strong in each other's company, even if neither of them was ready to say so. They found the way station where Brother David and the two young women lived. Over lunch, Benny and Tom and Nix told their story. The monk and the girls exchanged long looks, their faces sometimes sad at the news of pain and death, and sometimes hopeful, as they considered a future without Charlie Pink Eye and the Motor City Hammer. "Nix," Benny said, "do you mind staying here?" "No," she said. "Tom told me that you have a job to do."
"He told you?"
She gave him a funny look, deep and penetrating. "He told me everything, Benny. I understand about what he does, what you do, about the family business, about the need for closure." Benny touched her face. "Nix, I..." "Benny Amura," she said, with a rare flicker of a smile on her mouth. "If you were going to say something like, 'I love you,' and you choose here, in a way station out in the rot and ruin to do it. So help me, I will kick your ass. There was a fragile quality about her smile and a glimmer of the old Nyx woven into the complexity of this new Nyx. He loved both versions, but he valued his butt, and had no doubts that she could kick it completely and with great enthusiasm. "As if I would say something so stupid," he said. She cocked an eyebrow at him. "Can I at least ask for a kiss without being stomped and humiliated?" He could, and she proved it. Benny and Tom left at noon. They walked for several hours, rarely talking. The sun broke through the clouds as they cut through a grove of trees that were heavy with apples. Tom picked a few, and they ate them and still said almost nothing, until they reached the wrought iron gate of a community that was embowered by a high red brick wall. A sign over the gate read, "Sunset Hollow." Outside of the gate there was trash and old bones and a few burned shells of cars. The outer walls were pocked with bullet scars. To the right of the gate someone had used white paint to write, "This area cleared. Keep gates closed. Keep out." Below that were the initials T.I. Benny pointed. "You wrote that?"
"Years ago," Tom said.
The gates were closed and a thick chain had been threaded through the bars and locked with a heavy padlock. The chain and the lock looked new and gleamed with oil.
"What is this place?" Benny asked.
Tom tucked his hands into his back pockets and looked up at the sign. "This is what they used to call a gated community. The gates were supposed to keep unwanted people out and keep the people inside safe."
"Did it work? I mean, during first night?"
"No."
"Did all of the people die?"
"Most of them. A few got away."
"Why is it locked?"
"For the same reason as always," Tom said. He blew out his cheeks and dug into his right front jeans pocket for a key. He showed it to Benny, and then opened the lock, pushed the gates open, and then restrung the chain and clicked the lock closed with the keyhole on the inside now. They walked along the road. The houses were all weather damaged, and the streets were pasted with the dusty remnants of 14 years of falling leaves. Every garden was overgrown, but there were no zombies in them. Some of the doors had crosses nailed to them, around which hung withered garlands of flowers.
"Your job's here?" Benny asked.
"Yes," said Tom. His voice was soft and distant.
"Is it like the other one? Like Harold Simmons?"
"Sort of."
"That was hard," said Benny.
"Yes, it was."
"Tom? I never wanted this. I mean, we all played games. You know, kill the zombies, stuff like that. But this isn't how I imagined it."
"Kiddo, if you were capable of imagining this without having seen it, I'd be scared for you. Maybe scared of you." Benny shook his head.
"Doing this over and over again would drive me crazy. How do you do it?"
Tom turned to him as if that was the question he'd been waiting for all day.
"It keeps me sane," he said.
"Do you understand?" Benny thought about it for a long moment. Birds sang in the trees, and the cicadas buzzed continually.
"Is it because you knew what the world was before?"
Tom nodded.
"Is it because if you didn't do it, then maybe no one would?"
Tom nodded again.
"It must be lonely."
"It is." Tom glanced at him. "But I always hoped you'd want to join me. To help me do what I do."
"I don't know if I can."
"That's always going to be your choice." If you can, you can. If you can't, then believe me, I'll understand. It takes a lot out of you to do this. And it takes a lot out of you to know that the bounty hunters are out there doing what they do.
How come none of them ever came here?
They did. Once.
What happened?
Tom shrugged.
What happened? Benny asked again.
I was here when they came. Pure chance.
Benny looked at him.
You killed them, he said.
Didn't you?
Tom walked a dozen steps before he said, not all of them. A half dozen steps later, he added, I let one of them go.
That was Charlie, wasn't it? That's what he was talking about.
Yes.
Why did you let him go?
To spread the word, Tom said. To let the other bounty hunters know that this place was off limits.
And they listened?
The other bounty hunters.
Tom smiled.
It wasn't boastful or malicious. It was a thin, cold knife blade of a smile that was there and gone. Sometimes you have to go to some pretty extreme lengths to make a point and to make it stick. Otherwise, you find yourself having to make the same point over and over again.
Benny stared at him. How many were there?
10.
And you let one go?
Yes.
And you killed 9 of them?
Yes. The late afternoon sunlight slanting through the trees threw dappled light on the road and painted the sides of all of the houses to their left with purple shadows. A red fox and 3 kits scampered across the street ahead of them.
I let the wrong one go.
How could you have known? With one of the other guys, even Vin or Joey, it might not have been any different.
Maybe.
But I don't get to play that game. I made a choice, and a lot of people suffered because of it.
Tom, when you made that choice, you'd already beaten Charlie, right?
Yes. He was hurt and disarmed.
Then you did the right thing, I think. You can't know the future. You believed him when he said that he'd change his ways, right?
Tom nodded.
Benny said, I would have done the same thing, Tom, because I don't ever want to live in a world where something like mercy, or maybe it's compassion, is the wrong choice. Just because Charlie said you were wrong to let him live, it doesn't make him right.
Tom didn't answer, but he nodded and gave his brother a small, sad smile. They stood there, taking each other's measure, perhaps for the very first time. Taking each other's measure and getting the right values. Tom pointed, and Benny turned toward the front door of a house with peach trees growing wild in the yard.
This is it. There's a zombie in there?
Yes, Tom said. There are 2.
We have to tie them up?
No. That's already been done. Years ago. Nearly every house here has a dead person in it. Some have already been quieted. The rest wait for family members to reach out and want it done.
I know this sounds gross, but why don't you just go house to house and do it to every one of them? You know, quiet them. Release them.
Because a lot of the people here have family living in our town. It takes a while, but people usually get to the point where they want someone to go and do this the way I do it, rather than as part of a general sweep. With respect, with words read to their dead family, and then let the dead rest in their own homes. Closure isn't closure until someone's ready to close the door.
Do you understand what I mean?
Benny nodded.
Do you have a picture of the, people in there? So we know who they are. so we can make sure.
There are pictures inside. Besides, I know the names of everyone in Sunset Hollow. I come here a lot. I was the one who went house to house and tied the dead up. Some monks helped, but I knew everyone here.
Tom walked to the front door.
Are you ready?
Benny looked at Tom and then at the door.
You want me to do this, don't you?
Tom looked sad.
I want us to do it.
If I do my part, then I'll be like you. I'll be doing this kind of thing.
Yes.
Forever?
I don't know, Benny. I told you that I think I'm done with this, too. But I don't know if that's true. Besides, we don't know the future, remember?
What if I can't?
If you can't, I'll do it.
Then we go to the way station for tonight and head home in the morning. After that, maybe you and Nix and I will talk about going east. That jet had to land somewhere.
Tom, I know I've asked this already, but why don't people from town come out to places like this and just take them back? We're so much stronger than the Zoms. This place is protected. Why don't we take everything back?
Tom shook his head.
I ask myself that every day. They think they're safe in town.
That's not true. Ask Mr. Sachetto. Ask Nix's mom. It's stupid.
Yes, Tom said. It surely is.
He turned the doorknob and opened the door.
Are you coming?
Benny came as far as the front step.
It's not safe in there either, is it?
It's not safe anywhere, Benny. Not unless your generation makes it safe. My generation gave up trying.
They were both aware in that moment they were having a different discussion than the words they exchanged. The brothers went into the house. Tom led the way down a hall and into a spacious living room that had once been light and airy. Now it was pale and filled with dust. The wallpaper had faded, and there were animal tracks on the floor. There was a cold fireplace and a mantel filled with picture frames. The pictures were of a family. Mother and father, a smiling son in a uniform, a baby in a blue blanket. Two women who might have been twin sisters. Brothers and cousins and grandparents. Everyone was smiling. Benny stood looking at the pictures for a long time, and then reached up and took one down. A wedding picture.
Where are they? He asked softly.
In here, said Tom.
Still holding the picture, Benny followed Tom through a dining room and into a kitchen. The windows were open and the yard was filled with trees. Two straight-back chairs sat in front of the window, and in the chairs were two withered zombies. Both of them turned their heads toward the sound of footsteps. Their jaws were tied shut with silken cord. The man was dressed in the tatters of an old blue police uniform. The woman wore a tailored, frilly white party dress, whose sleeves were dark with blood that had dried years ago. Benny came around front and looked from them to the wedding picture and back again.
It's hard to tell.
Not when you get used to it, said Tom. The shape of the ears, the height of the cheekbones, the angle of the jaw, the distance between the nose and upper lip, those things won't change even after years.
I don't know if I can do this, Benny said again.
That's up to you. Tom took his knife from his boot. I'll quiet one, and you can quiet the other. If you're ready. If you can.
Tom went to stand behind the man. He gently pushed the zombie's head forward and placed the tip of the knife at the base of his skull, doing everything slowly, reminding Benny of how it had to be done.
Aren't you going to say anything? Said Benny.
I've already said it, said Tom. 1,000 times. I waited because I knew that you might want to say something.
I didn't know them, said Benny.
Not like I thought. A tear fell from Tom's eye onto the back of the struggling zombie's neck. He plunged the blade, and the struggle stopped.
Just like that.
Tom hung his head for a moment as a sob broke in his chest.
I'm sorry, he said, and then, be at peace.
He sniffed and held the knife out to Benny.
I can't, Benny said, backing away. Jesus Christ, I can't!
Tom stood there, tears rolling down his cheeks, holding the knife out. He didn't say a word.
God! Please don't make me do this, said Benny.
Tom shook his head.
Please, Tom!
Tom lowered the knife. The female zombie threw her weight against the cords and uttered a shrill moan that was like a dagger in Benny's mind. He covered his ears and turned away. He dropped into a crouch, face tucked into the corner between the back door and the wall, shaking his head. Tom stood where he was. It took Benny a long, long time. He stopped shaking his head and leaned his forehead against the wood. The zombie in the chair kept moaning. Benny turned and dropped onto his knees. He dragged a forearm under his nose and sniffed.
She'll be like that forever, won't she?
Tom said nothing.
Yes,
said Benny, answering his own question.
Yes.
He climbed slowly to his feet.
Okay,
he said, and held out his hand. His hand and arm trembled. Tom's trembled too as he handed over the knife. Benny stood behind the zombie, and it took 6 or 7 tries before he could bring himself to touch her. Eventually, he managed it. Tom guided him, touching the spot where the knife had to go. Benny put the tip of the knife in place.
When you do it, said Tom, do it quick.
Can they feel pain?
I don't know, but you can. I can. Do it quick.
Benny closed his eyes, and the old image was there. The white blouse, the red sleeves. Not red cloth.
Blood.
It had been blood. He took a ragged breath and said, I love you, Mom. He did it quick, and it was over. He dropped the knife, and Tom gathered him up, and they sank down to their knees together on the kitchen floor, crying so loud that it threatened to break the world. In the chairs, the two dead people sat slumped, their heads tilted toward each other, their withered mouths silent. The sun was tumbling behind the edge of the mountain by the time they left the house. Together, they dug graves in the backyard. Tom locked up the house and then relocked the chain on the front gate. Side by side, they walked back the way they came.
On first night? Benny began. All those years ago. I remember Mom with red sleeves. I remember her screaming. I remember you taking me and running. I looked back and saw Dad behind her.
Yes, said Tom. All of that happened.
The red sleeves. She'd already been bitten. By Dad. Hadn't she?
Tom's voice was a ghost.
Yes. She'd seen what happened when Dad got bitten. She was smart. She understood. She wanted us safe. Maybe she could already feel the change inside, the hunger. I don't know. But she begged me to take you, to save you, to run.
He buried his face in his hands, and his whole body trembled with that terrible memory and all the years of grief.
You saved me.
Tom said nothing.
And all these years you knew that I hated you. That I thought you were a coward. Why didn't you ever tell me?
Tom raised his head and dragged a forearm across his eyes. By the time you were old enough to be told, you already believed your version of it. Tell me, Ben, if I had told you the truth, would you have believed me? If we had never come out here, would you have believed me? Benny slowly shook his head. So I waited.
God, that must have been hard.
Tom shrugged. I knew that one day we'd come here. But when we got here, you knew, didn't you? When did you figure it out?
Benny sniffed and wiped his eyes.
Since we got back from Harold Simmons' house, when I was sitting on the back porch all that time, I figured it out. I just didn't want it to be the truth. I didn't ever want to come here.
Tom nodded.
Neither did I. But you do understand that we had to, right?
Yes, whispered Benny.
Because we needed closure, too.
Benny still held the knife. He'd cleaned the blade, but he gripped the ribbed handle with a tight fist.
Can I keep this? Benny asked, holding out the knife.
Why? His brother asked.
Benny's eyes were puffy from crying, but they were dry.
I guess I'll need it, he said.
Tom stopped and studied him for a long time. His smile was sad, but his eyes were filled with love. And with pride. He removed the boot sheath and handed it to Benny, who clipped it inside his own boot.
Come on, he said. Let's go back to the way station. Nix will be waiting.
I don't think Mountainside is home anymore.
Not for me, and definitely not for Nix.
We could go east, said Tom. Find out what's on the other side of the ruin.
The jet,
Benny said.
The jet, Tom agreed.
Benny and Mura looked back at the wrought iron gates and at the words painted outside. He nodded to himself. Together, they walked through the gathering twilight back to the way station where Nix would be waiting for them. They walked side by side, in the vast silence of the rot and ruin.
The End.